Welcome to Notes from the Western Edge, a monthly half-hour on-demand webcast featuring musicians who create on the edges of jazz, new music, electronics, and a broad expanse of sonic spaces in between. In celebration of Kenny Burrell's 75th birthday, this entire issue will be streamed free of charge throughout the month, leading to UCLA Live's tribute concert to him on December 2nd. Burrell is one of the most influential guitarists in jazz history. His fans include many musical luminaries, both past and present: Duke Ellington, Billie Holiday, John Coltrane, Dizzy Gillespie, Pat Metheny, Stevie Wonder, B.B. King, and Jimi Hendrix. His signature sound is best described by the title of one of the Duke's most famous tunes, In a Mellow Tone. But Burrell can burn it up with a soulful funkiness as well. As a youngster, Polish trumpeter Tomasz Stanko first heard the sounds of jazz not in the streets, not on records, but on the radio. Willis Conover's nightly Music USA Jazz Hour on Voice of America had an estimated 30 million regular listeners in Eastern Europe and the Soviet Union, and young Tomasz was one of them. Conover liked to call jazz the music of freedom, and that's exactly what it meant for the young Stanko. After he heard Dave Brubeck live in 1958, it was no turning back. The jazz life beckoned, and Stanko followed. I hope you enjoy the show. This year, the legendary jazz guitarist Kenny Burrell turned 75. To celebrate, UCLA Live will present Kenny Burrell's 75th, a tribute concert on December 2nd featuring some of today's jazz greats: Pat Metheny, the Gerald Wilson Orchestra, the Jazz Heritage All-Stars, and Burrell himself. In early October, I sat down with Burrell in his Schoenberg Hall office at UCLA, where he's director of jazz studies. We discussed his life as a musician and as a teacher, with only occasional interruptions from his office phone, a student here, a student there, and on his cell phone, some singer named Tony Bennett. Yes, that Tony Bennett, calling to wish Burrell well as he enters his 76th year. Bennett himself turned 80 recently. Actually, it shouldn't come as a surprise that someone of Bennett's stature would be calling Burrell. The saxophone player you're hearing right now is someone named John Coltrane from the album Kenny Burrell and John Coltrane. This is Why Was I Born? Burrell was born into a musical household in 1931. I asked him if his hometown of Detroit was a musical hotbed when he was coming of age.
Well, yes, it was. There was a wonderful array of musicians when I was coming up in Detroit, and we learned from each other. We exchanged ideas, we exchanged recordings, we had lots of jam sessions, we exchanged music. And some of the people that were there at the time were the Jones Brothers, Elvin and Thad, and Hank had already moved away. Tommy Flanagan was there with me, and Barry Harris, Curtis Fuller on trombone, Donald Byrd on trumpet, Frank Foster, Billy Mitchell on saxophone, Paul Chambers, Ron Carter was around on bass, and you know, so many others that I can't think of at the moment, but it was a wonderful atmosphere. It was like going to school.
While attending the School of Jazz and the clubs of Detroit, Burrell's reputation rose very quickly. At the age of 19, he got a phone call that led to his first recording date. Wait till you hear who was in the band. But that also led indirectly to his enrollment at Wayne State University.
In 1951, when I made my first recordings with Dizzy Gillespie, of all people, and in that band was John Coltrane and Percy Heath and Milt Jackson, they were passing through Detroit and stayed there for a month, and Dizzy called me, surprisingly to me, to come and work with them. And then he wanted me to travel, go on the road, and at that point my mother said, well, that's fine, but you know, you might want to think about if this all doesn't work out, you should go to college and there'll be other offers. So I thought about it, and she was right, because as soon as I got finished college, I got an offer to go with Oscar Peterson.
Mm-hmm. After 6 months on the road with Oscar Peterson, Burrell's career took off big time when he moved to the Big Apple. In 1958, he got together with some guys in the studio.
This album is one of the record dates or record sessions that they used to have in New York called blowing sessions, where the producer would call a group of guys together and they'd come and everyone would bring one or two tunes and you'd just rehearse right there in the studio and one or two takes and that's it. And it was not like a real band, they just put together various jazz artists. And so this was one of the blowing sessions. And then they'd just pick a leader. In this case, they picked two leaders, me and John Coltrane.
Who were those other guys besides Burrell and Coltrane on this tune, Freight Train? Fellow Detroiter Tommy Flanagan on piano, along with two members of Miles Davis's band, Paul Chambers on bass and Jimmy Cobb on drums. By the time Burrell recorded Midnight Blue in 1963, he already had recorded over 20 albums under his own name. Burrell also had appeared as a sideman on countless recordings by a long list of jazz icons, Billie Holiday, Kenny Dorham, and Jimmy Smith among them. He also worked the pop side of the street with singers Tony Bennett, James Brown, and Lena Horne, even playing in pit bands for a few Broadway musicals. But it was Midnight Blue that most caught the public's attention. I asked him about it.
Midnight Blue is the title tune from the album Midnight Blue, which is my best-selling album to date. It still sells, and I'm happy. I can't tell you why. I don't know why, but it seems to be something that appeals to the people. And I guess because it's a big sell, it has become kind of identified with me in terms of the sound, the chordal sound, etc. And it was recently picked again to be re-released on by Rudy Van Gelder, the engineer. He had a special series that he put his stamp on. And it was also one of the very favorites of Alfred Lion, who was the president and founder of Blue Note. Out of all the records he made, he picked this as one of his favorites.
Down home, soulful, swinging, funky, a groove straight to the listener from head to toe. But this is Kenny Burrell too. As a result of his mother's suggestion that he attend college, just in case the music thing didn't work out, Burrell learned music from the classical side too, which ended up in some of his original compositions, like Themes for Raphael, which begins with this Ode to Segovia.
I had written this song based on a Bach prelude. And I just used the harmonies of the Bach prelude to create this ballad, which we turned into a bossa. It kind of kept developing. And I play excerpts from the Bach Prelude to start it off. But I remember practicing this. I was in Spain on some tour one afternoon, and I went out into the courtyard, and I was just practicing this, kind of warming up on this Bach, and then this theme came to my head, and then I said, oh wow, what is that?
Another result of attending college is that by the time he graduated, Burrell had made a promise to himself.
There were some incidents that happened during my stay at Wayne State University that inspired me to become a teacher. The most notable one was not such a nice incident, but it was a time, this was in the early 50s, and most colleges were not teaching jazz. They were not involved in jazz. And in some respects, in some places, they didn't want to even talk about it. And that happened in one of my classes. It was a music appreciation class or something. And I'm this jazz musician and excited about it and playing it all the time and, you know, doing well. And I'm in this place of higher learning, and the professor didn't want to even talk about it. And every time I mentioned it, it was dismissed, more or less. And that upset me, but I had no choice because I wanted to just go ahead and get a grade and get through the school. But it made me stop to think and made me create a resolve that if I was ever in a position to do something to change that, I would.
And that's exactly what he did. In 1978, Burrell created his first course for UCLA, one he still teaches today called Ellingtonia. At the time, his touring schedule allowed enough time to teach only one class per year, so he thought long and hard about the most effective way to introduce students to the world of jazz. He decided on a class focusing on Duke Ellington because it
would be broad enough to cover many aspects of the music, because his career spanned such a long period, and he was so respected, and he connects to so many people in so many eras of the music. And he was probably the most successful jazz musician in many ways, both financially, artistically, both as a performer and a composer, etc. In fact, the jazz musicians voted him number one of the 20th century, and he received so many other awards.
Speaking of awards, Burrell has received a good many as well. He composed the tune Dear Ella, for which Dee Dee Bridgewater won the 1997 Grammy for Best Jazz Vocal Performance. In 2005, he was named a Jazz Master by the National Endowment for the Arts. And he's won countless Best Jazz Guitarist polls over the years. In addition to that, listen to what other guitar players say. Kenny Burrell is overall the greatest guitarist in the world, and he's my favorite, B.B. King. There's no finer jazz guitarist than Kenny Burrell. George Benson. Kenny Burrell, that's the sound I'm looking for. Jimi Hendrix. And from Stevie Wonder, Kenny Burrell is a great musician, and his music has helped to make me what I am today. I certainly can't add anything to that, except happy birthday, Kenny. I wish you many more. In Los Angeles, for Notes from the Western Edge, I'm Richard Paskey. Thank you. from a distance. From afar. From a distance, from afar, lontano. This is Lontano 1, a freely improvised piece from Tomasz Stanko's 2006 ECM release, Lontano. Tomasz Stanko's musical odyssey began in his native Poland.
That was long time ago, and I was educated. My father was judge, but also violin player, and me and my sister was educated from the beginning with the music, with classical music.
As he grew older, jazz represented something free to the youngster, growing up in an Eastern European communist country.
In my times, you know, jazz was kind of a synonym of freedom, you know, or something new of Western culture.
Every night, under the covers, Stanko found the sounds of jazz on Willis Conover's Music USA Jazz Hour on Voice of America Radio.
Radio was only the place where I can listen this music. Willis Conover programs was very popular in Poland, and this programs led me a lot about jazz. I think led me everything about jazz.
While Conover's programs might have taught Stanko everything about jazz, it was hearing Dave Brubeck live that really turned his life around in 1958 at age 16.
58 in Poland, in Krakow, there was the Dave Brubeck concert, of course. And that was my first contact with live music. Absolutely shock, fascination, and I was fascinated really strong, you know. Was great music and this freedom on the stage, you know, and improvisation and swingings and everything.
But it wasn't just improvisation and swing that attracted Stanko to jazz. It was
everything together, lifestyle. He was really top. Jazz musician was in this time in Poland, but I think all over the Europe also, kind of top class of artist. Every filmmakers, directors and actors, Polański in this time was in Poland, and everybody, you know, really have ambition to be with us. And we had this kind of feeling many years, you know. That's mean, of course, that was also part of that I want to be a really jazz musician.
In 1962, Stanko formed the band Jazz Darings, one of the first European groups to show the influence of Ornette Coleman's style of free jazz, an influence still heard in this piece, Quintet's Time from 1998's The Green Hill on ECM Records. This is truly an international group. Along with Stanko on trumpet are the Englishman John Sermon on bass clarinet, the Argentinian Dino Saluzzi on the accordion-like bandoneon, the Swede Anders Jorman on bass, and the Norwegian Jan Christensen on drums. When I asked Stanko how he learned to play jazz, he said,
"Mostly by instinct. Mostly instinctly we learn. But later I remember in beginning of 60s, I was studying also ornette music, and best way is just writing from the record line of improvisation. This is kind of fantastic, because you, the same time if you're writing this, you check harmonies, you check everything. You can check, this is best way to write yourself, not read, to just from the record take music and write yourself, make transcription of improvisation. That was very often we doing this."
So in the early 1960s, when many, if not most jazz listeners, and even musicians, thought of Ornette Coleman as being a charlatan who couldn't play his instrument, Stanko and his European friends were transcribing Ornette's solos to learn about his revolutionary approach to jazz improvisation. Over his 45-year career, Stanko has visited other musical spaces as well. In 1980, Stanko traveled to India to record music from Taj Mahal and Carla Caves. This is Sabigi. And here he is in 1987 at the Montreux Jazz Festival with his band Free Electronic. This is Asmodeus One. Thank you. In the 1990s, Stanko began working with a trio of 16-year-old Polish musicians, pianist Marcin Wasilewski, bassist Sławomir Kurkiewicz, and drummer Michal Miskiewicz. In 2002, they released their first recording on ECM and also embarked on their first American tour. On their latest release, Lontano, they performed 3 free improvisations, 5 pieces composed by Stanko, and this piece, Katorna, composed by Krzysztof Komeda, the late Polish composer and pianist. Much of Stanko's music has a dark, brooding edge. He once said that jazz is born from pain.
Blues is kind of song of pain, but very special kind of pain, very strong and also very optimistic, I have to say, because jazz is in fact very optimistic music.
The optimism in jazz that Stanko heard as a teenager, living behind what used to be called the Iron Curtain, has carried him through a lifetime of music with his own groups and with a host of kindred musical spirits. Gary Peacock, Dave Holland, the Globe Unity Orchestra, Cecil Taylor, Don Cherry, Edward Vesala, and many more. His life and work are a testament to the triumph of the optimism and freedom found in the music called jazz. In Los Angeles, for Notes from the Western Edge, I'm Richard Paskey. Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed the show. In Los Angeles, for Notes from the Western Edge and Fresh Ears Media, I'm Richard Paskey. Until next time, keep listening.